Here are a few more short suggested lessons for Christ in training. Passion. Jesus, as Christ in training, spoke much about peace, but he also exemplified passion. His cleansing of the temple is often perceived as a story about money changers and salesmen. Certainly that part is true, but it is really a story about passion. Reflecting on that incident, the evangelist quotes the Old Testament by saying, "The zeal for thy house has consumed me." I think Jesus was saying, if you cannot respect the house of God, which you can see, how can you respect the principle and source of love, which you cannot see? He is also asking you the challenging question, what are you passionate about? As we said in the 60s, what turns you on? Jesus encourages us to be passionate. He said, "Would that you were hot or cold, passionate, one side or the other. So because you are lukewarm or indifferent, and neither hot nor cold, I will spew you out of my mouth." Powerful words, powerful message. Another brief lesson, taking directions. When Jesus was 12, he was separated from his family and found teaching in the temple. When Mary discovered him and expressed her concern, Jesus replied, "Did you not know that it is my duty to be engaged in my Father's business?" The rest of the conversation is not recorded, but it is presumed that since Jesus did go back home, his mother might have said something to the effect of, "You're correct. You must be about your Father's business. Right now, your Father's business is for you to come home and be a boy of 12. Chronologically, the next detail in Scripture gives a hint at Mary's influence and Jesus' willingness to look at things differently through her eyes. There was a wedding feast. Jesus and Mary were there, and the wedding party ran out of wine. It was an embarrassing scene. Mary told Jesus, "There is no more wine." Jesus replied, "O woman, what have you to do with me? My hour has not yet come." Then in the next moment, Mary turns to the servants and says, "Do whatever he tells you." Of course, a few moments later, there is the wonderful water into wine story. Now here is what to ponder. Jesus said his hour had not yet come, yet Mary started things in motion, and Jesus followed without comment or complaint. If Jesus can listen to another voice and be open to doing and seeing things differently, then what about you? And then, finally speaking, practice, practice, practice. And what is it again you are supposed to practice? Awareness, for one. You need to become aware. You need to be aware of what puts you to sleep. You need to be aware and to be conscious of the negative patterns that seem to rule your life. You need to be conscious of your defensive reflexes that close your heart. You need to become aware of how to direct your actions. You need to remind yourself of who you are and realize there is work to be done. You have to wake up. As the mystic Gurdjieff said, you have to realize you are in prison before you can get out. You have to remember what really matters. It takes constant work to stay awake. I thought to myself, you know, there are some moments in my life that stand out in stark relief from my ordinary vision. Sometimes these moments are so extraordinary, they make the rest of life seem colorless and two-dimensional. If it is true that each moment is sacred, then what makes some moments seem more sacred than others? Is it my awareness that makes a difference? I wonder how many of those twinkling pieces of time I missed because I was too busy doing something else. During the final scene in Our Town, young Emily comes back to relive a special day in her life, her 16th birthday. As she tries to catch the attention of those she loves, she finds that her mother and father are so busy doing things, like fixing watches or making cakes, that they are completely missing Emily herself and the beauty and blessedness that is right in front of them. Painfully, she says to the stage manager, "Take me back. It is too difficult." Doesn't anyone realize the preciousness of each moment? His quiet reply was, "No, only saints and poets sometimes." Now, for me personally, it was the week after Thanksgiving, and my father was dying. He was admitted to the hospital a few days before with a severe case of pneumonia. A childhood accident, along with his drinking and smoking, contributed to a tendency to choke when eating. Evidently, some food entered his lungs after one of those choking episodes and precipitated this bout of pneumonia. By the time I had received the news and flown up to New York, Dad was in a coma and was not expected to live. My mother and I spent most of our days and evenings in the ICU waiting room. We would go in to see Dad, say a few prayers, and then go back and sit. My mother and I were both smokers then. We took turns going downstairs to do our dirty work. Every once in a while, only one of us was up there in the ICU waiting room. Now, I am a pretty introverted person. If I was sitting next to you on a train or plane, I would probably have my nose in a book and would be hoping you would do the same. If you did start a conversation, I would not slight you, and I might even be quite personable. But if I had a preference, I would still be reading my book. My father is dying, my mother is grieving, and here I am, this little introvert, with my nose in a magazine, probably an old ladies' home journal. Into the waiting room strolls a little girl pushing a wheelchair with a tiny stuffed bear riding in it. Normally, my first reaction would have been one of annoyance, but I surprise myself by putting down my magazine, smile, and saying, "Hi, what's your name?" She said her name was Missy, and her smile was like the sunshine of springtime on that gloomy, wintry day. I am still dazzled by the memory. At that moment, she touched my soul. It sounded as if Missy had a cleft palate that left her speech somewhat nasal and a little difficult to understand. I'm not sure if that was her reason for being in the hospital. Due to her speech difficulty, I was forced to listen to her even more intently than usual. She began chattering away about her little bear and all the other kinds of stuff that kids talk about. She was one of those kids who could converse with you as if they've known you all their lives. Now, my mom loved kids. It was one of her heartbreaks in life that she only had one child. She would have loved to have had a house full of them. When my mother came in, I introduced her to Missy. They took to one another immediately, which was not surprising to me. She and Missy did girl talk about details and dolls and clothes and things, and then we both shared in Missy's wonderful spirit and smile. I can just imagine what rich inner gifts were shining forth from her wonderful warmth. She thawed out my frozen soul that day. Without warning, a nurse came in, pretty much ignored us, and started reading Missy the Riot Act. "What are you doing here? You should be in your room, blah, 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 blah." I could not help but be reminded of Nurse Ratched in the book, the movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Missy quietly picked up her little stuffed bear, put it in her lap, and sat down in the wheelchair while the nurse rolled her out. We waved, said goodbye, and never saw one another again. Missy was an angel who entered my life. Here was a moment I could have really overlooked. I could have missed it so very easily by being wrapped up in some very legitimate feelings of sorrow and grief. I really wonder, how many other moments like this one with Missy I was unaware of because I was too busy doing things I thought were important. How many? What else do I practice? Acceptance. After awareness comes acceptance. Acceptance is another way of expressing surrender, letting go, giving it to God, and giving it over to Spirit. Many times that will mean saying, "I don't know what to do, God. I don't know the answer. You do. Guide me, direct me, and lead me." You are especially encouraged to let go of how you think your prayer should be answered. You are encouraged to let go of your preconceived notions of how the answer is going to manifest. Those rigid ideas create a box you put yourself in. Many times you will miss the answers because they are coming from an unexpected source or an unexpected direction. In your acceptance, you are releasing your limited identity and your attachment to the ego. You are opening yourself to a deeper, more true awareness of who you are. You are working and living out your relationship with Spirit. United with God and with Spirit, now you can really act. Now your actions can mean something. And that is one of the other things we can practice, action. Prayer is the best and most powerfully decisive action you can take in any situation. It is the best way of getting out of your ego, your trapped, limited consciousness, and enlisting not only a power greater than yourself, but also realizing you are united with that power and that the power of God flows through you. A few years ago, I was introduced to something called Silent Unity. It is a 24-hour prayer line. In a sense, not silent at all, because a live person is on the other end to pray with you, whatever your intention might be. And that intention will be prayed for nonstop for the next 30 days. Every time I have personally made use of that prayer ministry, I have been greatly unburdened of whatever I was carrying. Memorize this number. 1-800-669-7729. Tattoo it on your forehead. Use it. By taking action, you are getting rid of old patterns that no longer work, and you are also creating new ones. That kind of spiritual practice, in any form, brings you to a deeper level of loving. The question, "Why am I not moving?" or "What is stopping me from getting where I want to be?" are a trap. Those kinds of questions keep you in the problem. The real questions are, what are you going to do, and what do you need to do? Those questions are supposed to make you a little uneasy. Your dedication to your spiritual life is supposed to make you uncomfortable. There is no beatitude that states, "Blessed are the comfortable, for everything they desire will be theirs." Here are some other simple, practical exercises of spiritual action directed towards growth and transformation. One of the simplest and sometimes most significant actions you can take is to clean up your nest. There are going to be times when you just feel stuck. There will be times when you simply do not know where to go or what to do. You might not even know what question to ask. In those times, do something simple that can also be transforming. Something simple such as cleaning up your room or your home. If you cannot do it all, then chunk it down. Do little pieces, one corner at a time. It is amazing sometimes what happens when you clean up your nest. You gain a little more control over your life. You can experience yourself as having some power rather than being powerless. Work on finding solutions rather than being overwhelmed by the problem. You might feel overwhelmed, and you might not be able to immediately change that feeling, but you do not have to make your feelings into facts. You can have your feelings, but you do not have to be controlled by them. This is another great opportunity for prayer. God, I am feeling overwhelmed, and I am even thinking of myself as helpless. God, help me out of the box. Help me know there is already part of me that is creating a solution with your power, your help, your love, and your grace. Thank you, God, for the vision to see beyond my problem and to see beyond this limited vision I have of myself right now. Amen. Ram Dass once related a story which powerfully expressed the lesson of going beyond how you feel. It is so very important not to make how you feel into who you are. It seems he was living in California, but giving a lecture in New York. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang in his hotel room. The person who called said, "I'm going crazy. I'm going to kill myself." Ram Dass replied, "I don't want to talk with you." Now this breaks all the rules of therapy and helping. There was absolute silence on the other end of the phone. Ram Dass proceeded to say, "I do want to talk with the person who was sane enough to track me down from California to New York, who was able to find out where I was staying, who wheedled my number from the desk clerk, who was not supposed to give it out, and who was able to dial a 10-digit phone number at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's who I want to talk to." I love that story. Another thing we can practice is compassion. Compassion is not just feeling, is not just a feeling or an emotion. It is a willingness to open your heart, to understand the pain of another. It is not an easy thing. One of the reasons it is so difficult to go to a hospital or a funeral home is that you know there is nothing material you can do to change the situation or relieve the other of their pain. In the world's eyes, you will appear powerless because there is usually nothing you can do for the pain of another except to be there for them and to be present. Spiritually, though, you can offer comfort, and even though that does not assuage the pain, it does help the person to know they are not alone. Even though there is no objective way to describe the results of a compassionate heart or a compassionate act, all of you have experienced what the loving presence of another human being means, even if they cannot do anything to change the situation. I could not help but be reminded of a definition of love from one of my favorite books. It's called If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him by Sheldon Kopp. He said, sometimes love is the willingness to live with the helpless knowing that we can do nothing to save the other from his pain. Now I have to add to that by saying, other than being present to them, which by itself is a huge gift. After my father made his transition, I stayed with my mother for a week or so. I wanted to take away the pain of her grieving. I took her out to eat, to the movies. I cooked her dinner. Finally, she said, please, I just need to grieve. I got it. I could not eliminate her hurt. I could be present for her. I could offer nurturing and support, but I could not take her pain away. Gratitude. Count your blessings, you are told. That is a good thing. But gratitude is much more than that. Gratitude is the practice of cultivating a state of mind that constantly and consistently dwells on the positive, the holy, and the healthy aspects of life. It is not a denial or a glossing over of things that need to be addressed or changed, but rather it is a deep realization that change and transformation build on what is already working. Focus on what is working rather than what is not. Concentrating on what you do not have or what is not working in your life is like, as Scripture says, building your house on sand. We are influenced by a world that dwells on the negative and what is not working. The hope is that by paying a lot of attention to it, that it will somehow change. Certainly there is need for social awareness, but awareness of what is wrong by itself never changed anything. Gratitude offers the tools and the energy for transformation. Like beauty, gratitude opens your heart. An open and loving heart is uncluttered by doubt or fear, and therefore it is a vehicle for profound creativity. Notice what happens to you when you dwell on what you do not have. When you are living in a state of mind of scarcity and lack, your heart shuts down. Your capacity to love diminishes. You become tight and closed off inside. Paradoxically, you are now cut off from all that you really desired. It is so easy to get lost in the negative. There is almost a pleasurable seductiveness to feeling sorry for yourself because you don't have this or that. In that black hole of scarcity and dissatisfaction, it is difficult to see what is working in your life. It is difficult to see what you have to be grateful for. In this negative frame of mind, when gratitude is suggested, it is always answered with, yeah, but. As you practice stepping back from those dark experiences, you realize that there is no room for grace, no room for healing in that place of discontent. Please realize that you might not be able to alter the dark feelings immediately. But as was suggested so many other times, the feeling of lack or scarcity is not who you are. When your ego's desires are not met, it can seem as if your whole life is going down the tube. Through grace of gratitude, you can begin to realize, yes, there was something that I didn't get or that didn't work. I am angry or sad or disappointed. Yet that incident represents only a minuscule part of my life. It is just a little piece, not the whole thing. Relax. be open to what you have. Use what is already working. Be open to the flow of love and grace that is always there inside of you, surrounding you. Is there really anything more important in life other than knowing you are a beloved child of God? You know, I could be walking along the street, thinking good thoughts, or going through a catalog of looking for a gift for someone, and inevitably something will catch my attention and I've got to have it. I did not even know it existed a moment ago, but now it is taking up a huge space in my mind. Amazing. I've discovered that no matter what happens in life, my ego is not going to be satisfied. If I don't get what I want, it will naturally be angry. But even if I do get what I want, the satisfaction is so brief as to be non-existent. Either something else will come along that I want or have to have, or I will find out this wonderful thing I just went out and got is on sale someplace else, or a newer model just came out. When my ego's desires are in charge, I cannot win. Practice being okay in the physical world. The physical world, it's all right. In fact, it's a good thing to pay attention to your physical environment, including your body. Be alive to your senses. You do not have to indulge them in order to enjoy them. In fact, indulgence many times leads to the dulling of the senses rather than their enhancement. The world around you, again, including your own body, can be a source of love, of learning, of enjoyment, and of grace. As Christ in training, when you live in the world, you go beyond a mere sense of stewardship to the realization that you are part of this whole thing. You are part of the world. An aspect of who you are is manifested here in this world of matter. Just because you are not supposed to be of the world does not deny that you are in it. Although Jesus is described as being in the world, but not of it, he was not condemning physical reality. He was reminding us of the perils of attachment. He was reminding us of how things can pull us away from what we value spiritually. He was reminding us of how we can be distracted from what is more deeply important. On the other hand, the world we live in, the physical world, is our classroom. It is where we do so much of our learning. Just as our inner world, we have the choice of love or fear. In the material world, we can choose to find beauty or ugliness. You can find beauty anywhere, just as you can also find ugliness. Your perception is your choice. What would a day in your life be like if you could choose to find beauty everywhere and in everyone? The recognition of this choice and its positive practice is a profound act of love and spirituality. You know, one of my favorite lines in literature is from James Joyce. He wrote something to the effect of, "Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body." That's me. I lived in my head for most of my life. I never really felt, never really experienced life. Being in my body not only means really feeling and experiencing things in this material world, it means being present, being in the now. It means being open to all things. In the movie Starman, Jeff Bridges is just getting used to being in a human body. One of his experiences is eating for the first time. He sticks a spoon in his mouth, loaded with Dutch apple pie and vanilla ice cream. And as soon as he begins tasting, his mouth falls open. He has this big, silly, sloppy grin on his face, and he slobbers all over himself. He is in a state of ecstasy that he cannot describe. He is so overwhelmed by these wonderful sensations. You know, being in my body means not taking things for granted. It means being aware of and being grounded in every moment. It means being open to all of the beauty and experiences my senses are offering me. Practice being both precious and valuable as you are now, and growing to be more than you are. When your thoughts lead you into negativity, have an internal plan of action. Have a mental list of possible thoughts and experiences you can focus your mind on. It might not always change your feelings right away, but it will eventually shift your awareness to healthier, more positive ideas. Remind yourself that you are loved, not just when you find yourself in crisis, but every time you think of it. Do it. Now, I've struggled with this one. I have come to call it the paradox of spiritual growth. It is important to love and honor yourself just the way you are. It is also important to be open to continued growth. Now, my thinking mind cannot understand the paradox. It will say something such as, you are either fine the way you are now, or you will be fine later. You can't have it both ways. My soul knows, though, that both can be true. I can love myself just where I am, and I can be open to further challenges of growth. Think about a child you love. You know that you can love him or her just the way he or she is, and you can also be encouraging of his or her growth. There is no need for conflict. Practice the presence of God, and know that the realization of the presence of God carries with it unlimited strength, wisdom, and compassion of God, and most importantly, God's unconditional love. In Buddhism, the question is asked, how do I lead a full and complete life? The answer is, by preparing for your death. The student then asks the master, how do I prepare for death? And the master replies, by living a full and complete life. You are all going to be released from your physical body by a process that is sometimes called death. As someone put it, lighten up. No one gets out of here alive. The point is, when you realize your physical mortality, when you are aware that everything you do might be the last time, you will be much more attuned and grateful for the moment. You will be very conscious of letting people know you love them. You will be very aware of eating that peach or listening to the ocean. When you live with the sense that all is passing, you realize more and more the preciousness of ordinary things. You live more in this moment. You are more grateful, more thoughtful, and more present. Facing death is facing the fact of death, not a morbid fascination. It is a deep appreciation of the beauty and opportunities that exist right now. Remember the essence of your work? What is it you are moving towards? This is your goal. Nothing short of being as pure an instrument as possible for God's love and grace to flow through. Because not only are you the channel of grace, you are that grace itself, uniquely manifest. So what are you doing to diminish your ego and empower your soul? Do you want to wake up? Be honest now. Do you want to wake up? Even if you do not completely know what that means or what that will lead to, That is what spiritual action means. It means jumping into the unknown, the unpredictable. It means jumping into the things that will stretch you. It means jumping into the stuff that is bigger than you are. Even though you might not know where it is going to lead you, constantly know in your heart that you are always, always jumping into the warm, safe, loving arms of God. It was then I realized that my learning as Christ in training would continue because God is infinite. There is no graduation ceremony. As long as I am clothed in this body and somewhat bound by my human experience, I will be learning and growing. I remain in awe of that infinite presence. Even with the book's latest revelations to me, my learning has reminded me not to become attached. I am reminded not to become attached to a book or any other form, because teaching and learning are everywhere, just as God is everywhere. Every moment reveals the presence of God and all of God's gifts. The continuing life lesson of Christ in training is to be aware that whatever the situation, I have a choice of how I hold it. Grace is always present to aid in my choice. With the help of God and Spirit, I can choose to be warm, kind, loving, peaceful, passionate, creative, non-judgmental, and lovingly detached. All of these choices are mine when I acknowledge and depend upon the Christ within. My positive and loving choice reflects my oneness with Spirit. As I was returning the book to the shelf, one of the last things I read was from the ending of the Gospel of John. But there are many other things which Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. As I was leaving the store, I told the old man how much I enjoyed the book. I had thought about buying it, keeping it, and taking it home. But that felt like trying to lock the truth up in a box. The book, Christ in Training, showed me that teachers are everywhere, that any lesson I need to learn is right in front of me if I am willing to look. There's my lesson, in the traffic light, the grocery line, the angry driver, the crying baby, the know-it-all at work, my friend who is sick, my mother who wants and seems to never change. It's all there, just as it was before. Nothing has changed, and everything has changed. It's all here, if I can be aware of it. As the blind man said to Jesus, "Lord, that I may see." I'm sure I will visit the store again. Maybe I will spend another afternoon with the book called Christ in Training, if it is still there. Maybe there will be another book. Indelibly sketched in my mind were the final words, "Whenever confused, lost, angry, or in any way experiencing yourself as being separate from God and your true nature, go back to love. That is always the way." Blessings on you. Blessings and peace. As they say in India with the Sanskrit word namaste, the divine in me honors the divine in you.